Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 20, 2022. An editor of a newspaper in South Sudan is detained for defying court orders.
It is the court who arrested her on charges of contempt of court order because Anne has deliberately refused to implement the court ruling which was passed on the 13th of this month.
And the World Food Programme predicts food crisis in Sudan.
The 2021 agricultural season was a failed harvest.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor has been detained for allegedly defying a court order to stop publishing the newspaper over allegations of malpractice. A lawyer representing the family of the owner and founding member of Juba Monitor confirms Anna Namriano was picked by the police in the South Sudan capital, Juba. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Early last week, Juba Cattle's High Court ordered the Juba Monitor to shut down operation. The court order seen by South Sudan in Focus also froze all bank accounts of the newspaper. A lawyer representing the family of Alfred Taban, who founded the paper, said the family sued the paper publisher, Grand African Media, over what he calls a management dispute. 3 days after the court order, editor-in-chief Anna Mariano confirmed the dispute had lingered between the paper's management and the Taban's family, but she told South Sudan in Focus the paper was still in business covering the news. Bechu Pitia Lagu, the lawyer representing Taban's family, says Namiriano was arrested yesterday for defying the court order.
It is the court who arrested her on charges of contempt of court order because Anne has deliberately refused to implement the court ruling which was passed on the 13th of this month, asking her to close down the newspaper, cease the activities of the company, and focus. In failing to abide with that, the court decided to consider that a contempt of court order. And as a result, a warrant of arrest was issued and executed by the police.
Namiriano's lawyer, Lazarus Yugu, says he has yet to receive any official communication from the judge who issued the order explaining why his client was arrested. Yugu insists that his client's arrest was illegal.
There is no reason why the judge should actually issue that order. There is no court contempt at all because all of us, we were present at the court. We were present at the court, and I think this company is not actually a foreign company whereby a judge may suspect them to of maybe absconding, running away from the jurisdiction or something of that kind. The parties are present before the judge.
Yugu says Namiriano asked him to file an appeal against the order. He says the Juba Monitor continued covering news and publishing its paper because management had paid printing fee for a week in advance. He says Grand African Media Service, the paper publisher, was also waiting for some direction from the court.
Already had some orders. There was a company had actually some orders already being passed to the printing press for the printing of the papers. You know, they have already paid for 1 week, and they were in a call of just wanted to print for the week actually paid. You see, and while here the court has not yet appointed these guys who are supposed now to start the implementing the order. So they were at the court, even with the judge. We were hoping that the judge will have given us some further directives.
The Monitor, one of South Sudan's oldest English newspaper, was established in Juba in 2011 after Southern Sudan seceded from the rest of Sudan. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The international medical charity Medicines Sans Frontières, known as MSF, says it is treating dozens of people wounded in recent fighting between factions of the SPLM-IO in Leir County of Unity State. MSF's head of mission in South Sudan says armed groups looted property, including humanitarian and medical facilities, in Leir County. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Armed groups loyal to the SPLA-IO faction run by Simon Gadwich and forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar killed more than 40 people, burnt villages and looted humanitarian warehouses, according to local residents and officials. Lare County resident Angelina Nyale says some of her relatives were killed and others were wounded and receiving treatment at the Lare Health Facility. Nyale says many residents were left traumatized by the violence.
In Main County, we were attacked by two counties of Koch and Mayendit. Many people were killed and others injured, including men, women, children, and old people.
MSF head of mission for South Sudan, Federica Franco, says dozens of civilians in Lare were killed, including one MSF employee identified as Peter Mathor Tap. She says Tap worked with MSF in Lare since 2007, first as a supervisor at the former MSF hospital and more recently as a nursing care provider in an MSF health facility.
This is the second MSF staff killed in an attack while off duty since December. MSF is deeply saddened and concerned by the tragic death of our colleague Peter and strongly condemns the violence being carried out in an indiscriminate way by armed groups and the killing and injuring of many people in Lare County.
Franco says since the fighting began, the MSF clinic in Lare Town has treated more than two dozen patients with gunshot wounds and other victims of trauma, including survivors of sexual violence. She says the clinic had to create more bed capacity to treat all of the war wounded.
Some patients were evacuated to secondary healthcare facilities for surgical care, but others had to be simply relocated to other MSF hospitals in South Sudan due to lack of available space. This is because in addition to the war wounded, the clinic in Lare still had an ER with regular patients who could not be discharged.
MSF Deputy Medical Coordinator in Lare County, Grace Konga, says for the past 2 weeks, her health facility has been treating men, women, and children with gunshot wounds. She says some patients were transferred to other MSF medical facilities across the country.
MSF have so far received over 30 patients with gunshot wounds. An additional person were victim of other related violence. However, more persons are still arriving as for persons have been waiting to come out of hiding to assess treatment due to continuous safety and security.
Franco says after several humanitarian organizations left Lare due to insecurity, the MSF clinic has remained one of the few fully functioning healthcare facilities in the entire county and the only facility providing advanced emergency care. Initial assessments reported wide-scale destruction in Adok, Pilinch, Thonyor, and Tuchria, where homes were set on fire and properties looted. As a result, thousands of people have been forcibly displaced, including MSF staff, according to an MSF statement released yesterday. Franco says those displaced are too scared to return to their villages and many have lost all their belongings, including their homes. She says many have been hiding in swampland, making them susceptible to waterborne diseases.
While active fighting has now ceased, the impacts on the lives of the affected populations in Lare County is absolutely tremendous. There has been widespread destruction and looting of property, including humanitarian and medical facilities. One of our community-based healthcare clinics was partially destroyed, and two others were looted in the attacks. As a consequence, access to healthcare at the moment is severely limited.
Franco is calling on all armed groups to respect international humanitarian law and to immediately stop targeting civilians and health facilities. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
One survivor of Sudan's conflict in Darfur says the ongoing trial of a militia leader at the International Criminal Court in The Hague should send a signal to perpetrators of violence in Sudan. Guy Yusuf Adam says other Sudanese accused of committing crimes in Darfur should also face trials.
As a survivor, the trial, I mean, there is really no, there's not, not much somebody could say. It's the everything is clear, and this guy is a criminal. He's a war criminal without a doubt. And all what I want to see is just to be persecuted and the charges, and you know, because his act is that his crime that he committed is responsible for it, and now it's a time to be held accountable. That's all what I see, and also to not to forget those who participate in this crime also to be brought to justice, including the former president.
Were you in Darfur during the peak of the violence in 2003 and 2004? And what was it like?
Yes, absolutely. I was there. And not only that, that if I was there or not, but this crime or the killing and stealing our property, it just came to light in 2003, but activities as such were occurring since 84. But because the lack of the media, and we were kept like us in a block area, we didn't really had a chance to bring our stories out. But to answer your question, absolutely, yes, I was there when the attacks happened, which was the reason why I was forced to leave my country, and I end up in Israel, and now I'm here. But yes, I was there, and I witnessed all of this killing as well as the raping and looting of the villages. All this I experienced. I never thought that this would have had happened in my home village, but I end up seeing happen in my own village and also in my in our own house.
You survived. You get out. You were fortunate, and you have done very well for yourself. You went to Israel. You came to the U.S. You got an education. You have come a long way. But not many survivors of the war in Darfur have been as fortunate as you have. Tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands still living in refugee camps, IDP camps within Darfur, refugee camps in Chad, and displaced, you know, in other places, in Sudan. What are you doing to help people back home, survivors who have not been as fortunate as you are?
Again, as you state that, not a lot of my people from Darfur or survivors in particular were able to make it this far. Again, you know, and I what it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. I find that very valid. And after what I experienced, I believed in failure. It became not an option for me. So I that's how I used the struggle as a motive to be successful. And again, success is not complete yet until everyone being victim of this atrocity have his or her voice be heard. And I'm doing what I can to make their voices heard. And that's my main focus, as well as the supporting the ICC to bring all the perpetrators to justice.
For many, I have spoken to people from Darfur. With the Kosheb trial, they say there's an elephant in the room, maybe a few elephants. Former President Omar al-Bashir, Abdurrahim Mohamed Hussein, Ahmed Haroun, these people should be there as well. That's what they tell us. Because while Kosheb might have been executing orders on the ground, these people were responsible high up the chain of command. How do you feel about that, and what should be done about it?
I'm going to agree completely with them. And again, it's true. All these criminals, Ali Kosheb or Abdurrahim Mohamed Hussein, Ahmed Haroun, Kosheb, Al-Bashir, Taha, Salah Gosh, whoever, like any person who affiliated with the previous regime, I completely believe is a criminal. If they did not participate in killing directly, they participated indirectly.
Do you think that kind of justice will be achieved one day?
It is my hope, and I strongly believe it would, because if it doesn't, then to sustain security as well as to see eventually peaceful Sudan, it would be impossible.
That's Guy Yusuf Adam, a student at Georgetown University here in Washington, D.C. He was speaking to my colleague Nabil Biagio in our studio this past hour. Still on Sudan, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has announced two Federal Register notices on temporary protected status for nationals of Ukraine and Sudan. The Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, previously announced the 18-month designations for Ukraine and Sudan for TPS. The registration process for both countries begins on April 19, 2022. The Department of Homeland Security says all individuals who want to register for TPS under the designation for Ukraine or Sudan must file an application. The notice from the Department of Homeland Security further says to be eligible under the Ukraine designation, individuals must demonstrate their continuous presence in the United States since April 11, 2022, and continuous physical presence in the United States since the designation date in the Federal Register notice. The Department of Homeland Security estimates 59,600 individuals currently in the United States may be eligible for TPS under the designation for Ukraine and Sudan. Ukrainian nationals currently outside the United States are not eligible for TPS under this designation, and they may not become eligible by relocating to the United States in the coming weeks. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the World Food Program predicts food crisis in Sudan. Find out more after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The World Food Program in Sudan says more than 18 million people are likely to face acute food insecurity in the country by September 2022. That is due to conflict, economic crisis, and poor harvest. WFP officials in Khartoum say children and women will be affected. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
World Food Program officials in Sudan say the organization is facing a budget shortfall of $340 million over the next 6 months. Beside the economic downturn and fighting, the WFP says Sudanese are also battling food insecurity, flooding, and disease outbreaks, the main drivers of the country's humanitarian needs. Idi Rowe, WFP's country's representative for Sudan, tells South Sudan in Focus more than 18 million people, or 40% of the population, are at risk of acute food shortages by September 2022. He says crop and livestock production are down 50% in 14 states across Sudan.
The 2021 agricultural season was a failed harvest, and so crop failure as a result of erratic climatic changes, we experienced long dry spells. This impacted on the harvest of crops. But quite apart from that, there is a combination of factors which are all sort of conniving to aggravate the food insecurity situation in Sudan.
Rao says insecurity, especially in the Darfur and Kordofan areas, contributed to reduced crop production, as did diseases, pest infestation, and high prices of agricultural goods. In December last year, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan estimated about 14.3 million people across Sudan would be in need of humanitarian assistance in 2022. OCHA says it will need at least $1.9 million to provide assistance to Sudan's most vulnerable people, including internal displaced persons and refugees. Rao says the war in Ukraine has caused more problems for Sudan.
50% of the wheat that Sudan imports are from the Black Sea. and now we have a war ongoing in the Black Sea. Now this has a ripple impact on the cost of a loaf of bread. It has an impact on the fuel, and the fuel impacts almost every aspect of our lives in Sudan.
Rao says humanitarian partners plan to reach more than 9.1 million people with life-saving assistance in dozens of communities across the country. He says those services will include support for the most vulnerable people, food assistance, and access to water and domestic use and livestock.
Now, if you have communities who would struggle to have one meal a day, that is close to famine. And so our priority is to target these severe food insecure households to make sure that at least there is a meal at home.
Aid workers are also concerned about the recent uptick in intercommunal conflicts in the Darfur region, which has forced people to flee for their safety. He says migration of pastoral communities puts additional pressure on limited water and food available in some areas, which contributes to intercommunal violence. Rao says deadly fighting continues to hamper the work of humanitarian workers in certain areas of the country.
Households will find it difficult to even travel to their farms as a result of security. Even for us as humanitarians, we are finding it difficult in some instances to access these people who need assistance simply because of the insecurity.
The WFP suspended humanitarian operations in North Darfur State in December last year after three of its warehouses were looted. More than 5,000 metric tons of food items were looted, along with equipment worth $7 million, according to the WFP. Earlier this year, humanitarian partners appealed for more than $1.9 billion to provide assistance and protection to 14.3 million people in Sudan in 2022. Of that amount, $806 million is required for life-saving activities alone. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on food crisis, the World Food Program warns an estimated 20 million people in drought-affected parts of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia could face catastrophic level of hunger if the region is hit with a fourth consecutive year of drought. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The outlook is not good for the Horn of Africa. The rains have failed to come nearly a month into the current rainy season, which lasts through May. The past 3 years of drought have taken a heavy toll. The World Food Program reports crop failure in Ethiopia has plunged 7.2 million people into acute hunger and killed more than a million livestock. The situation is no better in Kenya, where escalating drought has left more than 3 million people short of food, including 500,000 who are facing emergency levels of hunger. In Somalia, the WFP says 6 million people, or 40% of the population, are food insecure, with more than 80,000 on the brink of famine. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, the WFP Regional Director for East Africa, Michael Dunford, says the number of hungry people could spiral from an estimated 14 million to 20 million if the rains fail to come yet again.
That the situation is bad, it continues to deteriorate. We're desperate for these rains to succeed. But even if they do, these populations are exhausted. The water sources are exhausted, the livestock are dying, the crops are failing, and we are heading to a very severe situation unless we're able to pull it back from the precipice.
Dunford says there's anecdotal evidence that children already are dying from malnutrition-related causes because they are not able to get the nutritional feeding that could save their lives. He says the WFP is severely underfunded. It only has received 13% of a required $370 million. Since that appeal was launched in January, he says the number of people needing help has increased, as have the costs. He says the WFP now requires $473 million to scale up its operations over the next 6 months.
Funding gap means that WFP is having to prioritize in such a way that the prevention of malnutrition, we now are going to have to focus primarily on the treatment. And at some point, even these programs will not have sufficient funding if the current trends continue. And we will focus exclusively on humanitarian feeding programs.
Dunford says the fallout from the conflict in Ukraine is compounding the problems in the Horn of Africa. He says the conflict has sent food and fuel prices soaring to unprecedented highs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Moudou. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end the show with DJ Arafati and the song Bira Bira.
Yeah. Bira Bira. I'll see you. Bira Bira. Bira Bira. Bira Bira. Bira Bira. Bira Bira. Bira Bira. Rabona taki obu edileta Mata alibu geli bataki fomfom Mata silu iya haja guangwam Egeni bira, veti subira Rabona taki obu edileta Bira bira, veti su Bira bira, itabiligo 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 Ngachi ni kimandoso kwa drono ya Keri luri kiasi Mililia, imatuliaro Alumiro kozo daniri Lialiaro, milia Lialiaro, mili Lialiaro, milia Lialiaro, miusuda Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira, itabiligo Bira bira, fetisu Bira bira Itabiligo, bira bira, fetisu, bira bira, itabiligo, bira bira, fetisu, bira bira, itabiligo. Mata kunta ma bira bira, itabiligo. Mata shilu iya jagwam gwam, kene bira, fetis bira, fakir bira. Rabuna taki bwa dileta, iya jatala min guwa bito selilo, fakir lo. Mata kutu galbak bata, die hard wakat, everything gonna be right. Y'all be them set, no ganki.
We have been listening to DJ Arafati and the song Bira Bira. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kike na komba ndugu yangu, pia mola wakumombe, Onkimwambea Mola wako atakubariki kama mimi.